Hello, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for my French, which doesn't exist. So I'm based in Ireland, and I'm a lecturer in film and digital media. And I'd like to briefly speak about the intersections of punk theories, punk studies, and queer theory and trash cinema. I think I'm going to the previous two papers were focused mainly on New York movements and specific important people who were kind of well known within the scene, and my presentation is like kind of trying to perhaps stretch the term punk and no way movement towards more like territories of filmmaking that doesn't necessarily focus on music makers or music performers, and kind of look at certain filmmakers who are not necessarily directly linked to punk or the no wave scene, but that perhaps we can find a lot of intersections and overlaps between gay rights movement and queer theory and this paracinematic concept called trash cinema. At this larger recontextualization of punk aesthetics and cinema in general constituted my doctorate thesis, which is finally finished. This presentation wouldn't be like it wouldn't be enough to kind of like cover all the areas within that topic. So I'm just going to briefly talk about like the kind of the differences between perhaps the what we know as the punk cinema canon, the punk cinema that involves like documentaries and mockumentaries or music films that mainly take punk figures and venues like CBGBs or the New York No Way scene as like their subject matter. I am more moving towards like a punk aesthetic in a more larger kind of concept and connected with the paracinematic effect of trash cinema and queer aesthetics in general. So firstly, I'm going to talk about a bit about what this term punk cinema is, how it's studied in general in the fields of musicology or film studies or sociology, and how these documentaries are kind of considered within academia in general. So the low-budget documentaries and mockumentaries that are counted as the key examples of punk cinema heavily rely on backstage and concert footage. And these footages are deemed generally valuable to the subcultural audience because they are rare. This backstage footage becomes a trope then through which most music documentaries construct their so-called transparent aesthetic. The subcultural aspects of these films, the films involved in this punk cinema canon, are very visible on screen, especially in the early examples such as the punk rock movie that is based on the London punk scene in the late 70s made by Don Letts, and the Blank Generation, from which we saw some clips in the previous in presentations, directed by Amos Poe and Ivan Kral in 1976. These are the key examples in this punk cinema canon. And because they're considered as transparent because of the fact that they are made within the physical and the immediate physical environments of specific punk events of the time. But the fact that they utilize a certain populist kind of or more like sensationalist perception of punk is kind of mainly ignored. Early punk cinema relies on the cinematic referential codes of the heteronormative gaze, browsing through the shocking images of the subculture, echoing the media sensationalism of the time. So I know that I'm aware of the kind of boldness of this argument, and I'm going to quickly move towards what I'm calling as a trash, and maybe perhaps in the questions section we can talk a bit more about it. But generally the idea behind this argument is that the abundance of concert and archive footage comes across as an overriding effect. For instance, in the reception of the punk rock movie, All the Brank Generation, revealing the role of constructed transparency in the standardization of punk history that ignored many aspects with regards to the involvement of women and queer subcultures. I argue that the intersections between punk and queer subcultures offer the critical area where these canonization methods of earlier punk cinema are generally displaced by the lesser-known female drag and gay figures, fragmented narratives, camp abundance of queer parody and fake musical performances rather than real performances. Generally, in these intersections, the politics of realistic representation are dispensed with via a deliberate coupling of low-budget artificiality and spontaneity, rather than claiming a transparency of subcultural truth or realness. And this is the type of politics of queer negativity that I associate more with punk aesthetics and cinema generally, that is not necessarily found in the punk cinema canon. Punk as a subculture had influences on and connections to film through movements that have been subjected to a large number of analysis within queer studies. Movements such as Riot Girl or Queercore attest to the direct connections between punk and queer. The Riot Girl movement, which started in Olympia, Washington in the 90s, expanded in a range of further movements, including lesbian separatist fractions through the gay rights movement. The queercore movement originated in Canada, made up of visual artists as much as musicians, such as Bruce LaBruce, G.B. Jones, and Vaginal Cream Davis, started as a fake counter movement that criticized the mainstream gay culture, as well as the punk culture, and it was influenced by Riot Girl, producing fanzines rapidly in the 90s. Another movement that directly links punk subculture and queer subjects in Europe is La Movida Madrileña, Spain's sexually diverse punk response to commercialism in the post-Franco era, specifically set in Madrid in the early 80s. In addition to these direct connections between punk and queer spheres, and Warhol's factory productions in the late 60s, Derek Jarman's films that emerged from his communal environment in the 70s and 80s, the No Wave film movement and cinema of transgression in post-punk New York, and early John Waters' films along the lines of trash cinema reflect links to punk scenes in the American context. Of course, different artistic influences and connections go beyond the Anglo-Saxon-oriented historicities of punk, and it is important to acknowledge the diverse societal formations on a global scale that resonate with avant-garde aesthetics. And there are newly published trans-global punk scenes book series also attest to this, the global extent to recent studies. However, my focus here is specifically the Anglo-Saxon connections between punk and queer, as I would like to also briefly mention their etymological roots of the English words punk and queer that are actually widely used in a lot of different languages, as punk and queer are English words, but even we have it in both of them in Turkish. So to briefly go into the etymological roots of the punk a little bit, queer theorist and race scholar Tavio Nyong'o's etymological study on punk uncovers the historical intersections between the terms punk and queer's perception and circulation in the Anglo-Saxon context. Nyong'o explores this connected historicity of the words via, quote, the contemporary American Africanization of the meanings of punk, where punk is conflated with gay, and the term being punked refers to a derogatory position that the male homosexual inhabits, unquote. This etymological investigation reveals the connections between the study of street cultures. Nyong'o refers to this as street theorizing, which requires acknowledging the racial dynamics of the street and prison in different settings and considering the dialogues between punk and different subcultures such as hip-hop. Referencing the Dictionary of Contemporary Slang, Nyong'o also notes, "No source I consulted could definitely trace the origin of the punk, but a representative etymology reports that the word originated in British slang around the end of 17th century when it was used to denote a whore, and later a precursor to the modern rant boy." This point makes it clear that historical intersections between punk and queer subcultures have always been there when terminologies are considered. As the roots of punk and queer words terms demonstrate, we find an embrace of negative labeling in both. Trash cinema predating punk cinema is where we find the roots of such reclamation in cinema. The 60s, 70s exploitation film cycle and the New York underground midnight film culture revolving around figures such as Jonas Mekas, John Smith and the Kushar brothers gave way to the celebration of trash in cinema that once was subjected to condemnation by audiences, filmmakers and critics alike. This is the era that predated the no wave and cinema of transgression in the 80s. And a lot of no wave artists actually would cite figures such as Jonas Mekas and John Smith and Kushar Brothers as direct influences. In general, trash cinema manifests the queer and camp roots of punk itself in terms of rejecting high aesthetic value, which is associated with the term proto-punk, low camp, and the counterculture avant-garde. As Guy Barefoot also notes, trash cinema carries negative connotations, even if only to turn them upside down, and it is a term like punk, an insult that came to denote a particular form of music, but which retains at least some of the aggression inherent in its adoption. John Waters, viewed as a key figure in trash cinema, adopted the tropes of exploitation cinema through a specific collective low-budget expressionism that reclaims disgust, terror, and the abject status of the queer subject. Waters was also not necessarily New York-based, and he was coming from Baltimore and had like a group of friends, Dreamlanders, they were called, as like a filmmaker space where they were making films with very low budget. His trash cinema also utilized the campness of Hollywood productions that stemmed from the limits of the production code, which was called the Hays Code, that forbid sexuality and gay expression on screen until 1968. So Waters' cinema rendered this type of camp, which is also called in low camp in film studies generally, and queer expressionism is an essential part of trash aesthetics on screen. His first Mondo film-inspired feature, Mondo Trasho, in 1967, has no dialogue, but only a soundtrack of popular songs of the time, preceding the method of using asynchronous soundtrack that we find in early punk documentaries of the late 70s, such as the Bank Blank Generation that Seb's film took some clips from. Elise Rera Nunes explores Waters' adoption of Mondo films and the exploitation genre, both in relation to production and distribution conditions, as follows. Quote, the Mondo film genre was inspired by documentaries from the first half of the 20th century, exploiting the practices and habits of societies all over the world. Later, Mondo film became an inspiration for many mockumentary films of the 60s. Waters' Mondo Trasho, whose title is a direct tribute to Mondo Topless, exploits the Mondo film genre's capacity to depict humanity's potential real-life trashiness and gross out his audience, unquote. Moreover, Waters' first talkie film, Multiple Maniacs in 69, is described by Chris Holmland as a product of its time, quote, full of counterculture, hippie-yippie, proto-punk energy and rage, unquote. These early guerrilla films exploited the camp subtext of mainstream Hollywood by taking melodramatic acting to the extreme, specifically through the drag performances of the late disco star Divine, portrayed by Harris Glenn Milstead. Milstead was a longtime collaborator and a friend of John Waters, who featured in most of his films as a member of the Dreamlanders, a label that describes Waters' collaborator friends from Baltimore, who formed together with Waters a low-budget production company, Dreamland Pictures. Milstead's drag persona, Divine, gradually became well-known in American underground cinema through the early John Waters films, eventually rising to international fame as a disco star via staging notorious live shows, mostly in Europe, and releasing disco records throughout the 80s. Milstead's personal manager, Bernard Jay's book, Not Simply Divine, published after Milstead's sudden death in 88, provides a controversial account of Divine's disco career, as it focuses on Milstead's financial and health problems as well as his bad habits. The tone of the book throughout echoes the backstage sensationalism of punk cinema, with its premise to scrape off the makeup and unveil the real divine. However, as I analyze in my thesis that there is more to Divine's performance, the pre-disco underground acting performance can be considered along the lines of queer terrorism. That is actually what constitutes a lot of aesthetics that are associated with punk now. Incorporating trash into the context of punk cinema is not directly a decanonization, as some of the key texts in the punk cinema still can resonate closely with the queer politics of negativity, such as one of the examples of punk cinema canon in the UK, Derek Jarman's Jubilee, which was shot in 1978. Jubilee's inclusion in my doctoral research provides a transitional point from the formation of proto-punk ideals through trash cinema's queer terrorism on screen to the unrecognized spatiotemporal intersections of punk and queer subcultures in London's punk era. As it can be identified in the literature around British punk, Jubilee is considered an important work that characterizes a specific moment in England's history in its combining of punk camp and royal history. Despite its status within the punk cinema canon as an important text, it is somewhat a neglected piece in the larger field of study on Jarman's art in general. Colin McCabe detects in Jarman's approach to cinema a form of rearranging time, which will be explored further through the idea of queer temporality in queer studies. Quote, the experimental nature of Jarman's home movie making had always made Jarman aware of various ways of manipulating the image through time, unquote. Jubilee's aesthetic position as both within and somewhat outside of punk cinema due to its dedication to camp reenactments of both historical and punk figures such as Elizabeth I and Shakespearean references, instead of relying on any degree of factuality or any backstage sensational or archive footage. And this prioritizes free-floating trans-historical associations rather than claiming to offer a so-called transparent or accurate depiction of the punk scene of the time. Finally, as the final example of the theme of queer temporality in cinematic punk beyond the UK-USA axis with regard to Spain's punk movement, La Movida, I'm going to talk about just a little bit about Pepe Lucy Bomb. In its English title, Pepe Lucy Bomb, The Other Girls Like Mom. The embeddedness of Pepe Lucy Bomb in Madrid's subcultural movement in the 80s demonstrates perfectly how subcultural experience gives way to an aesthetic strategy of survival that transforms low-budget restrictions into self-reflexivity. Pedro Almodóvar's first feature film centralizes a sexually diverse band of women within the context of La Movida and embodies similar punk aesthetics to the trash cinema genre emerged in proto-punk New York through Kushar Brothers and became cultish with John Waters. The temporary disruptions in this film's narrative progression stems from the specifics of Madrid's locale and exhibits similar queer punk temporalities to Jubilee, embracing the degraded status of the queer and the poor sections of society as well as the sexual minorities. As Mark Ellenson also points out, there are remarkable connections between Jarman's Jubilee and Almodóvar's Pepe Lucy Bomb, which was made 2 years after Jubilee. Quote, two aspects stand out, the depth both of the gay culture and the production contexts of the films which leave their mark on stylistic elements, unquote. Despite this subcultural embeddedness, Pepe Lucy Bomb hasn't been as strongly associated with punk cinema as Jarman's Jubilee was, even though it was basically a DIY product of Almodóvar's involvement in underground spaces in Madrid. He basically used his own apartment, a small apartment, as a film set. However, through the multiplicity of perspectives attached to the subcultural conditions of the films mentioned in this presentation, we can notice a considerable overlap between gay underground cultures and different coping mechanisms in response to racial, sexual, and class-related social stigma in three different locations. Exploring the role of gay shame and the problems with Almodóvar's later film, and specifically Talk to Her in 2002, from a feminist perspective, the queer theorist Jack Halberstam identifies through these examples through these examples I also mentioned, a gay aesthetic that tends to project its negativity onto the female body and explores the possibility of a feminist gay shame. As with Almodovar's aura, sorry about my French, Halberstam also considers Andy Warhol's art as an art of projection, which utilizes the popular status of the admired diva figure, specifically via the Marilyn Monroe prints and screen tests of famous Hollywood actresses. For Jack Halberstam, this projection addresses gay shame through emptying out the aesthetic of the ideal femininity, so as to waive the cultural conflation between gay subjecthood and its association with the ineffectualness attached to femininity. Even though I don't mean to finish my presentation by directly positioning all these films I mentioned, and Almodovar, Waters, and Jarman's early films, within this problematization of such gay iconography, I still wanted to bring this last point into the presentation to perhaps open up another perspective to think punk aesthetics through. Because this line of thought provides an opportunity to explore the feminist criticisms within the intersections of punk and gay subcultures and the cinematic indications of such co-occurrences. And we can actually trace a direct connection between the 70s feminist film theory and subcultural filmmaking, as the recent publication by Professor Rachel Garfield also manifests. As the various connections between subcultural spaces and paradigmatic movements continue to illustrate, punk aesthetics in cinema, relying on referentiality, irony, and parody, can be more about bringing out the diversities and unnoticed radicalities within political movements than about a direct adaptation of political language that might run the risk of compromise. And I'm going to end my presentation on that note. Thank you.